This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. State Representative Jace Bolger is in his third term representing parts of Calhoun and Kalamazoo counties. The Marshall Republican has been Speaker of the House since 2011. We are speaking with him today at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in downtown Battle Creek. Also here are Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer and Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette. Representative Bolger, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, Gordon.
And Alex Mitchell, you have the first question.
Representative Bolger, a recent grand jury investigation concluded looking into the 2012 political party switch you helped former state rep Roy Schmidt with. The investigation found you were not guilty of any criminal charges. Can you talk a little bit about the outcome about that investigation and your feelings?
Sure. Well, the investigation, I think, was thorough and exhaustive. It was the sixth such review or investigation completed by Republicans, Democrats, and independents. It once again found that I've always told the truth and that I've always followed the rules. If I look at the situation and make a bad comparison, the bad comparison I would make is as if I were a football coach who learned the rules and then ran a reverse pass to defeat my opponent. And the reason I say that's a bad example is because what I've certainly learned is this is not a game. And our focus should not be on our opponents. Our focus should be on our voters. And so I've learned a lot from this process. I hope I've grown from this process. I issued a public apology back originally in July, so more than a year ago. I've sought to live by that apology. Within that, I pledged to focus on the issues, to learn from this mistake, and I will call it a mistake, to learn from that and to move forward. People have tried to accuse all sorts of things. So again, as I'm cleared from any wrongdoing, any legal wrongdoing, I'm certainly relieved to see that once again a review has found that I followed the rules. However, that is not to say that I didn't make a mistake. Roy Schmidt switching parties was not a mistake. I would do that again. We took it one step too far in worrying about his opponent. And it wasn't to win. It was to protect him, if you will. The reason for that is we didn't believe we were going to beat Roy when he was a Democrat. He'd been elected for 20 years. We were worried about what the Democrats would do to destroy him because he switched parties. But once again, the mistake is to focus on the competition or to focus on winning instead of focusing on doing what's right for voters and letting voters make that decision.
Jennifer Bowman.
Going back to that apology you had last year that you had issued publicly, I'm quoting you now, but looking back now, I realize we should have held ourselves to a higher standard than just following the rules. And you touched upon that right now, but a lot would argue that this contributes to how politics can get ugly here in Michigan. And that's not something unique. I mean, that's the rest of the country that they're dealing with. But when it comes to this divisiveness, how do you think that impacts us getting some real issues taken care of and making some progress here in Michigan?
Again, as you look at that, I certainly think it was a mistake to focus on winning and to focus on defeating your competition. This isn't a game. I grew up a football player, but this is not a game. This is very real and serious work. And so our focus needs to be on solving problems and solving the problems that are facing Michigan's men and women, children, and delivering those results. And so that is certainly what I've learned. As you look at the environment, as you look at people's negativity, I certainly understand that. And I saw what the other side said about me in the campaign. Certainly, they would have led you to believe I was guilty of all sorts of not only rule breaking, law breaking, even though that wasn't the case. And we all need to work together, whether it's the media, the elected officials, the public, to focus on what's happening, not what might be happening, to focus on positive instead of the infatuation with the negative. And we see it in campaigns, we see it in the media. For some reason, positive doesn't sell, but negative sells. And so that is, I don't know whether it's chicken or the egg. Which comes first? Does the media focus on that? Do politicians focus on that because that's what people respond to? Or is that what's out there? Do people see that because that's what politicians and the media focus on? I'm not sure which comes first, but what we need to do again is we need to focus on what's right for the future of our state and not, even when people try, not get distracted by the negative and not get distracted by the politics.
To continue the analogy of the game, you said also back when this whole episode unfolded that you thought it was necessary to look at the rules, i.e. to look at the laws that govern this sort of thing. Do you think that the reforms that have been enacted make the process more transparent in such a way that this has become, if not impossible to do, much more difficult to do.
As you look at writing laws, that you have to be very careful, because I was interested and we passed rules to reform, but you can't block people's access to the ballot. And as you look, say, for a description, the candidate that Roy recruited here, people are concerned that he wasn't in to win. He was in to hold a place or to be on the ballot. But as you look across the state, people file all the time for various different reasons, and you don't want to block their access. My opponent in the last campaign had his filing fee paid for by the state Democratic Party. Early on, before controversy erupted, there was a lot of talk that he was simply on the ballot to be on the ballot. My point is, they were certainly there. I'm not likening my opponent to this, to the opponent up in Grand Rapids. The point, though, is as you write a law, it'd be difficult to differentiate between the two. And that's where we would need to be careful with writing the law. So we did adopt reforms. I think we do need to focus, though, on people and voters and get away from focusing on the other party and on the competition.
Is it transparency here, perhaps the thing that you ultimately shoot for? You know, perhaps knowing who has paid for someone's filing fee, knowing some of the things about how they might have ended up on the ballot in the first place?
And I think that comes out in a campaign. It certainly came out in this campaign. And so the voters were fully informed in both races. The voters who had access to all information, I would say they didn't have enough access maybe to my information. The reason for that was because I was hamstrung. I couldn't speak about the situation. I issued that apology before the grand jury, but then once the grand jury started, I could no longer speak about what was happening, what I knew, what I believed. And so if voters had not just information, they had weighted information against or accusations that I couldn't effectively defend. So to your question, certainly transparency is important and the voters need to be fully informed. And I think that that happened in this process as well.
Former Representative Roy Schmidt has indicated he may be interested in running for state house again, perhaps for his old seat in the Grand Rapids area. Would you encourage him to make another run for office?
I've not spoken to him. I think we both need to focus on, again, doing what's right. We both need to focus on learning lessons and recognizing mistakes. And so I've not spoken to him.
Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette. Next question for House Speaker Jace Bolger.
Some have speculated that if you were to have faced criminal charges, that would have really damaged your public perception moving forward in your political career. How do you feel being cleared of these charges helps your perception moving forward as far as what you might be looking to do in the future, maybe 2014?
Frankly, I couldn't be any less worried about my political future. I'm going to continue to be focused on the people of the state. I gave them my word back in July when I issued that apology. I have sought to learn my lessons. And I think what this does above all is it validates that I've always told the truth and that I've always followed the rules. I never have viewed myself as above the rules. In fact, I have openly said I'm not perfect. I've never been perfect. And yet I never wanted to prove that in this way or in any way. Nobody would want to prove that publicly, but I certainly have proven my imperfection. So when I look at the future, I just couldn't be any less worried about my own future. I'm going to continue to do what's right for the people of the state of Michigan. When that angers people from the left through Right to Work, or that angers people on the right through Medicaid reform, I'm not going to worry about my own political future. I'm going to worry about the state's future.
Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Talking a little bit about the future, I know you can't run for your House seat again because of term limits, and I believe State Representative Kate Siegel is in the same boat. And so that means there's a possibility for some leadership changes, at least here in the Battle Creek area. What are your thoughts on that, and what do you kind of see as far as the future going once your term is over?
Well, I hope that Republicans maintain the majority of the House in the next election on November of 14, and I believe they will. I believe we will because of the decisions that we've made to not shy away from the challenges, to not punt, if you will, or ignore the problems facing our citizens, but to tackle those challenges, to provide those solutions. So as you look at then the next leadership of the House, that is going to be up to the next House of Representatives. I won't play a role in that. I'm not going to play a role in that in advance, and I certainly won't play a role in that later. That's their decision to make. So I'm going to keep focused on doing my job and not worry about the future. I'll tell you, it is an exciting time for me personally. My wife and I have two great great kids. My wife is my high school sweetheart. We celebrated 20 years of wedding anniversary this summer, and our kids are both going to be off to college by the fall of 2014. So we'll be newly empty nesters, meaning the world is wide open. We can do whatever we want, and I'll worry about that much later.
You brought up earlier that you have angered some people on the right with Medicaid expansion. What case would you make to the Republican senators who seem to be reluctant to pass the Medicaid expansion bill, which went through the House?
Doing nothing is not an answer. Doing nothing does not protect our taxpayers from the things that we are appropriately worried about with the federal government's direction on Obamacare. Doing nothing does not protect our citizens from the taxes, from the penalties, and from the mandates of that federal legislation. Doing nothing also, though, doesn't solve the problem facing Michigan's uninsured patients, the men and women who work, who do not make enough money to buy or are not awarded health care coverage, the children in our state who do not have health insurance. Today, we have a society, thankfully, that does not turn our back on people, and we do not ignore people who need medical assistance. I think that's a good thing. But that means that today, people, because they don't have health insurance, are receiving health care in the most inefficient and ineffective manner possible for them. It's not treatment. It's not prevention, rather. It is they're showing up at the hospital when things get very serious. And it's also the most expensive way for taxpayers and ratepayers for health insurance. So what we've offered in the House, I think, addresses both problems. It offers protections for Michigan's taxpayers. It offers significant reforms to save taxpayer money and offers those protections for the federal government. If the federal government changes the rules or doesn't adopt our waivers would be needed, then the system is canceled. It does not happen. It doesn't start if they don't issue the waivers up front, and it's canceled later if they change the rules. Again, as well, you're going to have patients who are uninsured today receiving preventative care, receiving treatment in a more effective and efficient manner.
You've said that if the Senate comes back by late August with the Medicaid expansion bill, that should be enough time to get waivers from the federal government. What if they come back and make some serious alterations to that bill, and then that has to be picked over by the House? At that point, is there some real deadline problem here with getting this done and getting the waivers?
We're getting close. We have to be ready by January of 2014, and the department is saying it'll take about 90 days to work with the federal government on the necessary waivers. So at the beginning of September, we are right there, and we don't have any wiggle room. The Senate, we've worked very closely with the Senate all summer. They've had hearings. They've worked with us. We've been kept up to date. We've given our feedback. So the hope is that the Senate will adopt a form that we can agree with the last week of August, and then we will concur with that the beginning of September, that right immediately after Labor Day.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're joined today by State House Speaker Jace Bulger. We're recording at the Kendall Center, Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in downtown Battle Creek. Also with us today are Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer and Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette. Alex, next question for Speaker Bulger.
When the Senate comes back, what are the potential dangers of the longer that the Medicaid expansion gets put off? What do you think it's going to take to get it done sooner rather than later?
I think that we're going to continue to tackle those problems, to address those questions and those concerns. I would point out that normally this would be part of the budget process that wouldn't have been resolved in a lot of years past until the end of September. So I understand the impatience. I understand the anxiousness of people who are watching. But we're having this conversation today because we wrapped up our budget at the beginning of June, again, for the third year in a row. You have to remember, it wasn't very long ago that the state legislature was not getting its budget done until October. We had two government shutdowns because the legislature didn't have its budget done. So we're running close to the deadline, but we're not in overtime. We're not extended past appropriate time yet. Again, it's my expectation that we will wrap this up, and we will wrap this up by the first week of September by working very closely with the Senate, who has not checked out for the summer, just the opposite. They've been hard at work all summer, and as have we, staying in close contact with them.
Jennifer Bowman?
If I can be as optimistic as I can be and assume that, you know, we get this Medicaid expansion passed, there could be the possibility that we can put our focus, you know, shift it back to transportation and road funding. And when we interviewed Governor Snyder on the same show, I had told him there's few things that Michiganders get more riled up about than potholes. What say you on what proposals have been put out there as far as getting our roads fixed, and what do you think needs to be the solution to the problem?
I think we're going to continue. If I back up and talk about issues that we're going to continue to cover, jobs remains concern number one. Jobs is job one. We need to continue to make Michigan that better place to find a job and for people to advance their career. We've talked about Medicaid. I would add no fault insurance reform, as well as roads. So to your question on roads, there are a lot of different proposals out there. The governor has offered a proposal that, frankly, we have said is not going to work. The House has a package that we're working on right now, and that would dedicate the dollars that taxpayers pay at the pump. So the sales tax that they pay at the pump, if that went to roads, we wouldn't have a road problem. That today is siphoned off, if you will, and goes to schools and local governments, as well as the general fund budget. So if we make that change, we will have solved our road problem. I think that's an important step, so that taxpayers know that the taxes they pay at the pump go to roads. However, you don't solve one problem to only leave another. And so you then have to fill the hole created when you redirected those tax dollars, I think, more appropriately. And so for that, that's where the real conversation is happening, and that's where the real debate is happening. What's the best way to do that? I should back up, though, and say that I believed it was important that before we look to taxpayers, before we look to any new revenue, we dedicate everything we can to prioritization of our current budget, our current allocation to roads. And so in this last budget, we identified $350 million to go to roads. Even while we're increasing early childhood education, even while we're increasing K-12 higher ed education. So that was an important step. I have not seen proposals, though, that would go beyond that. So we still have that problem. The question then, to get back to you, is when you're filling the hole that was left from schools when you redirected those dollars, the conversations today are providing voters the option to go to a 7-cent sales tax. The other conversation would be to broaden the base and potentially lower the sales tax. Those answers are not yet provided. Those are the conversations we're having with our colleagues across the aisle and across the chamber. So Republicans, Democrats, House members, senators alike have been at work all summer and will continue to work until we find that best solution.
If you were to go with the idea, though, of dedicating gas tax dollars to roads, at the same time that you are talking about reform of personal property tax, which affects the revenue that comes to local governments, don't you have local schools and governments with those two reforms getting squeezed pretty hard?
Not at all, actually. The personal property tax was not just a repeal. We are rededicating existing use tax dollars to fill those holes so that police, fire, jails, key services are reimbursed at 100%. There would be very little impact on local communities from the PPT, the personal property tax reform, a tax that really disincentivizes the kind of investments we need to create jobs in our state, a kind of tax that locals abate or don't charge all of the time in order to compete to bring jobs. So we are being very responsible to make sure that while we solve problems, we don't allow those solutions to create other problems that we don't answer. So through the personal property tax, we are providing that answer by dedicating those use tax dollars. The public will have to vote to do that, to guarantee that dedication in August of 2014. And the personal property tax doesn't take place if that ballot initiative isn't passed.
How likely is it that voters are going to have to weigh in on this one way or another?
Well, on which one? The roads part or the personal property
Either
tax?
Either one.
They have to weigh in on the personal property tax. So the voters have to agree that the use tax that's already paid, again, the key is it's not a new tax and it's not an increase. There is no change for taxpayers. But they would have to vote to agree to dedicate that money to our local units of government. And if they reject that, then at that point, the personal property tax doesn't reform, does not happen. The repeal does not happen. When it comes to roads, that's an open question. Going to voters, the necessary need to go to voters would be because you can't go above 6% sales tax without changing the Constitution. So the voters would need to do that. In order to send that to voters, you would have to have a 2/3 vote of each the House and the Senate. And so, again, that's an open question of what's the right policy to solve the problem of our roads and to protect our schools.
Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette.
There's recently been some discussion to add new ailments to the Medical Marijuana Act for qualifying patients. One of them was post-traumatic stress disorder. How do you feel about these discussions to add ailments such as PTSD? And where do you feel the general conversation of medical marijuana as a whole is going for the state?
Medical marijuana has been a mixed bag. At the time when the initiative was on the ballot, I said nobody wants to deny somebody who's truly suffering and who truly can only find that relief from marijuana. But there was a guessing or prediction at the time that people were going to abuse that and that it was going to be recreational use with an excuse of a card. And so that debate continues to how we best honor what people put in place on the ballot. It's not uncommon, though, when the public has an initiative that you have to put a framework around that. The legislature has to put a framework on that. Where can dispensaries be, you know, et cetera, so forth. And so that debate is going on right now in Lansing with regard to marijuana, as with regard to a bill that would decriminalize the use and not legalize, but decriminalize, meaning make marijuana a personal use or personal possession of a personal use amount akin to a speeding ticket instead of clogging up our jails or our court system in that way. So there, I think we need to have a full conversation instead of continuing to piecemeal various pieces or loopholes or creating Swiss cheese of our marijuana laws. We really need to evaluate what's the best policy for our society when it comes to marijuana. That conversation is happening today.
With the potential abuse, like you mentioned, of medical marijuana cards, patients possibly just getting the card for recreational use, and many municipalities across the state moving towards decriminalization, you mentioned the possible bill that could make it a statewide thing. Do you feel that it might be smart for the state to look at moving towards decriminalization instead of focusing on medical marijuana?
I am open to having the conversation about decriminalization. I want to be careful to be sure that we're aware of all potential consequences and we're comfortable with all potential consequences. But I do have to ask myself, is that offense, as having a personal possession or personal use of marijuana, should somebody face jail time for that? Or is that more akin to speeding? Again, nobody would say speeding is legal, but the offense fits the penalty. And so that's the question, I think. And so what I'm very open to is having that conversation and making that decision here in Michigan.
Several cities have moved to decriminalize in some way, including Kalamazoo. Do you think looking at the experience that these cities have had is a good way of gauging what the state might do on this issue?
Again, you look at, I think, the issue and you have to ask, why do we have penalties? What is the concern? And you look at our experience with alcohol. And I think you can make a very strong argument that alcohol is worse. It causes more societal damage. It causes more individual pain and harm for individuals and families. And so I think we need to be cautious. We don't want to have a society that we have rampant drug use and we have the people on the streets, meaning driving, et cetera, that puts other people in danger. But when it comes to somebody's individual in their own home, I think we really have to ask ourselves, is our current policy appropriate? And I think you're seeing that others are taking those actions, those cities, and I think that they're not seeing the kind of nightmare consequences that some people would have warned about.
Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer. Next question for House Speaker Jace Bolger.
I want to talk about LGBT rights and the efforts around the state and local municipalities looking to expand those rights. And even here in the city of Battle Creek, there's been a push to get an anti-discrimination ordinance passed to protect those from the LGBT community against discrimination in housing and employment. What's your stance on that, and what do you see as far as any chances of there being a statewide effort at this?
Discrimination is wrong. Bullying anybody is wrong, simply put, for any reason. And so as you look at protecting from discrimination, I am very interested in that conversation. And as you look, I don't think anybody should be discriminated against because they're gay. I certainly don't think they should be demonized because they're gay. Likewise, I don't think anybody should be forced to violate their religious beliefs, and I don't think they should. Somebody with deeply held religious beliefs should be demonized. And so as we have this conversation, we need to all be very calm about the conversation, and we need to be very respectful about the conversation. If we can find a way to protect all, so that if we can find, very specifically, if we can find a way to protect somebody from being discriminated against because they're gay, and at the same time protect somebody's individual religious liberty, that's what we need to do. Thus far, I haven't seen that proposal. However, I've asked for that proposal. So we have various attorneys working on it in various capacities to ask, can we respect both somebody who's gay and somebody who has deeply held religious beliefs? If we can achieve that, then that's the conversation I want to have.
Does there come a point, though, where those two things may be in conflict? And at that point, do you have to decide which one wins out here, non-discrimination or religious rights?
And I don't know how you make that decision, because the very foundation of our country was on religious liberty. It was people fleeing England at the time to exercise their religious liberty here. Liberty is important on all fronts. And so personal liberty and personal responsibility, I think, is key and essential to our society, our American society, and certainly our Michigan society. And so as we have that debate, we need to be focused on both. I don't believe we can accomplish true protection of personal freedom by ignoring one or the other.
Do you also view it as an economic issue? Some people have made the case that Michigan is going to be kind of shutting the door on some very talented people if it is not seen as a place that's welcoming and is seen as a place where people can go and not be discriminated against.
For me, that's not my motivation. I understand that point and I understand that argument. But for me, the motivation is the individual and looking at individual men and women and how are they protected and how are they treated in our society. And again, for me, whether you're gay or whether you have deeply held religious beliefs, we need to make sure that you're both protected and that you're both respected.
Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Jennifer mentioned that Battle Creek was looking at an ordinance, anti-discrimination ordinance. Kalamazoo townships already passed one. Do you feel that townships and cities that have already passed ordinances like these could maybe serve as a test for how this could play out at the statewide level?
They may. However, the conversation's already underway at the state, so I don't know how much time we would let lapse. I think we're ready to have that conversation, certainly ready to do that research. And like I say, that research is already underway. The legal research of going back to what Gordon was asking about, can you find that balance for both? So that's been our focus right now. If we get that answer that yes, legally we believe we can accomplish both, then I think we move into the point of having committee hearings and having that debate over whether that can be achieved legally.
Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Just a fun political question. Governor Snyder will likely, you know, be up for re-election, and all thoughts are it's going to be a Snyder versus Shower. What are your thoughts?
Who would have thought two people from Battle Creek would be facing off for governor of the state of Michigan? I think Governor Snyder has done a remarkable job. A remarkable job facing the challenges that were left behind from our last lost decade. We had population loss because we had job loss. We had budget deficits that had gone unresolved, and we had mounting debt. Governor Snyder has tackled each one of those and working with the legislature to put Michigan on a brighter path, a better future. As I look at Mark Shower, I think he was very much a part of the last lost decade. He was there at the time. He was working with Governor Granholm when they made decisions that were the wrong decisions for Michigan. We don't have to wonder what his policies would do. We saw them in action in Michigan, and we saw kids fleeing the state to look for work in other states. We saw families harmed because they couldn't provide for their family. And so for me, it's no question. Governor Snyder has done a very good job and will continue to do so, and is motivated by nothing other than doing what's right for our families and for our future.
Okay, just a little bit of time left, so let me try one more time on what you've already been asked. We know that you will not be in the state house come 2015. Are you still open to the idea of seeking public office in 2014 or perhaps further down the line?
I have a job I'm looking to do. I'm not looking for a job. And so I'm going to continue to focus on my current job. I will tell you that I really enjoy what I'm doing today. And the reason I enjoy that is because I believe we are having an impact. We are solving problems. We're delivering results for Michigan's taxpayers. If somebody came and there was an opportunity to do something that I thought I could contribute to, I would listen to that. But I'm not out looking for that. So I don't have any need to hold elected office. I'm not going to rule it out because I enjoy what we're doing and solving those problems. If I could do that in the future, I would look to do that.
Jay Spolger, thank you for your time.
Good to be with you.
Jay Spolger is the Speaker of the Michigan House. The Marshall Republican represents parts of Calhoun and Kalamazoo counties. And also thanks once again to Alex Mitchell of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette and Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Enquirer. I'm Gordon Evans. This is West Southwest.